I've been given the high sign that I need to start promptly, but we are a minute over, but that's okay. We do have folks on the web, I guess, coming in as a webinar, so there'll be probably some comments and questions through the internet as we proceed this afternoon. I'm Rita Colwell, chair of the Committee on Women in Science, Engineering, and Medicine, and I would like to welcome all of you to this very special report launch on behalf of the committee, but also on behalf of the National Academies. And as you know, the academies include the National Academy of Engineering, the National Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Medicine, and also the National Research Council. Frankly, they do all the work, but don't let anyone know that. And the Research Council serves as the principal operating arm of the academies. Now, just a little bit about the academies. These institutions operate under the same Congressional Act of Incorporation that established the National Academy of Sciences that was signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1863. And the academies will be celebrating, the National Academy will be celebrating the anniversary next year. In 2013. President Lincoln essentially created an entity that would not be part of the government but would give scientific and technical advice and counsel to the government. It was presumed then, and I suppose you could really argue it as well today, that by being separate from the government, it could focus on its mission and not be caught up in any political fray. So I think considering today's congressional situation, it's probably a good thing to be quite separate. Now, the Committee on Women in Science, Engineering, and Medicine, referred to colloquially as CWESM, was established as a permanent standing committee of the National Research Council in 1990. Actually, it's kind of hard to believe. It's been some 22 years. Seems almost yesterday that we had to fight to get recognition. And I have to mention that the meetings were usually held in the old building, which has now been renovated, in the basement, in the cafeteria, sort of next to the cook stove. And then we sort of complained a little bit, and so they moved us from the meeting on Sunday morning at 7 a.m., you know, the annual meeting from the kitchen, they moved us upstairs to Sunday morning at 7 a.m., and then some of us grumbled a little bit more. So now we actually have Sunday noon meetings of the Women's Committee, and we have some, usually some very, very good speakers that attracts men as well to come and hear what we have to say, so that's very good. As the chair of the committee, though, I can tell you that we recently reviewed the mandate of the Committee on Women in Science, Engineering, and Medicine and strengthened our commitment to a priority that's very, very relevant to today's report launch. Our current priorities include an explicit focus on women's participation and leadership in science, engineering, and medicine globally. Now, this focus, being chair, it wouldn't surprise you that we would have an international focus because I've done most of my own research in Asia, in Bangladesh, working on providing safe water to families and focusing on the education of girls and women. Having had the tragedy of very recently of a little girl who was shot by the terrorists simply because she wanted to be educated and she wanted girls to be educated. So I think we do have collectively a role to play that's very, very important, one that is going to take us a few more years to be able to say that girls everywhere should be allowed to be educated. Quite frankly, my experience in Bangladesh has been quite fantastic because my first visit to Bangladesh was in 1975. That was really quite fun because I was wearing blue jeans and a t-shirt, and remember this was, you know, 40 years ago. And I was leading the research group, and we went in a remote village to do some of the sampling, because I've been working on cholera for a very long time. And we, it's a flight, long flight in, you know, 20 hours to get there, and then it's like a four-hour bus ride. You know, when I say bus, that's a euphemism for kind of a rattle-trap leftover automobile. And then to a ferry, and then to a Boston whaler, and then we landed in Matlab. And all the little girls were hiding behind trees, and all the little boys were sort of trailing. I felt like Pied Piper. And they were trying to figure out, was I really a woman? Because I was telling all these guys what to do. So that was a very interesting experience. Now, since then, I've had the wonderful opportunity to serve as science envoy and was detailed to Bangladesh. Of course, it was like coming home to that country. It was wonderful to be able to actually meet the Prime Minister, who is a woman, and spend an hour talking to her. And incidentally, the issues of climate change, again, are family issues. And for Bangladesh, it's not theoretical. It's very real. They already have instituted measures to protect some of the towns and villages in the Bay of Bengal, perhaps fruitlessly, against the floods that come ever more severely every year. But also, they have a ruling that if you have been evacuated from some of the further reaches of the country into the Bay of Bengal, you're not allowed to go back, because 20% of that country will be permanently flooded if the least extreme prediction for the sea level rise occurs in the next 40 or 50 years. So the president, prime minister of Bangladesh, is very much engaged with women's issues. Another important feature about educating girls that I would like to emphasize is that when I first went to Bangladesh, the fertility rate was something in the order of about 7.5 or 8.5. With the education of girls and the introduction of girls into the workforce, the fertility rate now, as of last year, is the same as the United States, 2.5. So educating girls, educating women, bringing women into the workforce, bringing women into science, engineering, and technology is good for a country. Now Bangladesh, in percentage-wise, not in volume, but in percentage, is the exporter of goods second to China. Quite amazing. So educating girls, bringing women into the science, engineering, technological, medical workforce is good for the economy, it's good for the security of a country, and it's good for stability of social systems. So let me turn now to today's launch, because we've provided enough time, in fact, quite an optimum amount of time, to discuss amongst all of us in this room. And I'm really delighted to see this room filled up. Kitty told me that, 75 have been invited, but, you know, they might not all show up. We did. So this is terrific. We should have a very, very good discussion. It's my understanding, too, that those on the web, as I said earlier, can email questions, and there's a team ready to receive the questions. And the questions will be shared with the audience by the staff of the committee. So I look forward to the discussion this afternoon and the focus on how we can move forward in ensuring that women scientists and engineers throughout the world have access to education and career paths. I have more than a passing interest in this. I have two daughters. They're both scientists. One's a medical scientist, and the other is a botanist who eschewed the academic world and is now the botanist for Yosemite National Park. So she says she has the dream job. Women should be allowed to do whatever they wish. I also have a granddaughter, and I'd like to make sure she has an opportunity, and I'm sure there are other next generations represented in this room as well. So it's now my pleasure to introduce Susan Gardner, the Deputy Director of the Office of Science and Technology Cooperation at the Department of State. Dr. Gardner will give us her perspective on why women scientists and engineers are a critical component of her agency's efforts to foster scientific and technical collaboration. I'm delighted to introduce Susan because she did her PhD at the University of Washington. Go Huskies, right? And she did a postdoc at NOAA and then did a little, you know, study abroad program, just try something out. Went to Mexico and was there for a long time. She was doing teaching and research, but she was hired by the Mexican government, met her husband there, and then they came back on a AAAS fellowship, and now she's with the State Department. So with that wonderful peripatetic career and background that I'm very happy to share, Susan, come and tell us about what's going on at the State Department under a very good female Secretary of State.